Winter Day Hockey O'Clock.
In diesem Augenblick wird jetzt richtig hitzig. Und die Scheibe kollert über die Linie.
Mittendrin statt nur der Ball.
Das ist unglaublich, was die vier zelebrieren.
Nice move. Another nice move.
I cannot emphasize enough how much I've been looking forward to having this conversation. It is episode 201 of Winter Day Hockey O'Clock, and conveniently enough, it happens one episode after the big number 200 in Linz. And for that matter, it gives me great pleasure to have the championship-winning head coach of the Black Wings Linz of 11-12 here with me. He's also the winningest head coach in league history, Coach Rob Daum. Pleasure to have you here in the beautiful Winter Day studio.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for the intro.
Well, deservedly so. I mean, there would be many more accolades to add, and eventually we might hit some of those, but it's great to see you. You're looking tremendously well.
Well,
how have you been?
I've been good, thank you. I've been I'm healthy. I'm got a lot of energy. I'm doing well, thank you.
It's a great time of the year to talk with you, and this goes to all the listeners and viewers out there. Yes, you can also see this, what we're doing, and I'd advise you to log on to YouTube right now. You'll find the link of this in the show notes of the usual podcast, because we're trying to talk about some of the teams. Obviously, first and foremost, it's great to see you sporting a beard for the very first time.
Well, it is the first time. I've always been clean-shaven my whole life until a couple months ago. I decided to let it grow, and people of importance liked it, so I've just kept it. So,
it's indeed great to see you, and we're also going to dissect some of the teams in the league in this part, and this is part of a two-part series. We'll talk about some of the teams in the top six. And in the second part, which will be out a week from now, we'll talk about some of the teams that are currently in the bottom seven and what they can do to work their way up their ranks. And just as a general note, we're recording these conversations a little farther out than usual. It's mid-January right now. And as of this recording, you'll hear a lot of numbers that might change and a lot of placements that might change, because these conversations conveniently come out during Super Bowl week, where Winter Day is on site in New Orleans too. Yeah, getting a Super Bowl trip in here. And the second part, we'll see the day of lights at the start of the home stretch of the regular season. I think it's February 12th. So if some major changes are taking place in between now and the appearance of these podcasts, please be aware of that. Coach, so much for the introductory part. A lot of people, I'm sure, are wondering, what have you been up to lately? How often has the phone been ringing? There have been openings, other maybe more attractive than others. How often did the phone ring?
That's rung a couple times. I thought I was in line for a couple of different jobs, but unfortunately, it didn't come to fruition, and I really like the opportunity to coach again. As we, you know, I, as I mentioned earlier, I feel good. I've got lots of energy. I think I've got lots to offer somebody that is looking for a coach, and I just have to. There haven't been as many changes this year as over previous years. Often, there's two or three times more changes than there have been this year. It's just been one of those years, which is great for the guys that are coaching, and not so good for the guys that aren't.
Now, you're one of the brightest hockey minds this country and this league has seen, and you're the winningest head coach, and you've become the winningest head coach by being well-prepared, tactically advanced, and for so many other reasons. If you're looking for a job, and if you're considering taking a job, what would be a thing, or what would be things that entice you?
Well, I think the biggest thing is the people you're working with, you know, the quality of the organization, the vision of the organization, the plan that they have moving forward. When you take a job at this time of the year, if it happens to be at this time of the year, it's usually a difficult situation, because the team is almost always not succeeding, And, you know, that's never easy. And as time goes on, it becomes more difficult because you have less time to have an impact. Although that I've gone into teams during the season on four different occasions, one as late as February 5th in the middle round that used to be in the Ice League. I took over a team in that circumstance. So whatever presents itself, you know, every situation has a different challenge, and you have to see the challenge and then do what you can do to turn the ship around a little bit. And you know, that's, but again, it's the people you work with, the organization, it would be the key thing.
You left major imprints on two organizations in this league with the Steinbach Black Wings Linz and with the IDM Wärmepumpen VSV, but your imprints and everything that you've done go far beyond our league. And this is where I want you and all the viewers and listeners out there to listen in and view a clip that we brought along, because one of the premier coaches in the business right now happens to be one of your former players and proteges, Chris Knobloch, head coach from the Edmonton Oilers. There are many, many clips where he speaks highly and very fondly at the time you two had together, and how much of a mentor you've been to him. I found one with where he's in conversation with Louis DeBrusque of Sportsnet, and I just want to listen into this clip and then discuss it with you afterwards.
The program they have at the University of Alberta is incredible, and you were a part of that. You won a championship with the Golden Bears. Just talk about that time and how maybe it influenced you as a young person to think about coaching in the future with a guy like Rob Dahm at the helm that was, you know, known to be such a terrific coach.
Yeah, no, I absolutely have a lot of respect for Rob Dahm, and he was my coach for all 5 years there. Tremendous respect. He's a great coach. We also had some guys from Pro come and join us for some Mike, skates, and made it a lot more enjoyable.
It was fun. Mike Comrie and I skated with you guys for 2 years while I was waiting to get a contract. I couldn't believe how hard you guys worked. There's Rob there. And Rob was nice enough to let us come out and skate with you guys, and you guys put us through the ringer.
Louis was on the record earlier today as saying he had to work harder with the U of A Golden Bears than he did with
It was incredible. I was so impressed with how hard you guys worked. I really was. You guys came after studies, after school. The practices were in the evening, and you guys left it out there every day. But you talked about the competition today there with that extra line and extra people. You were always fighting for more time, and that kind of sparked that competitive nature.
Well, there was a couple of things. One, we had a lot of good hockey players graduating mostly from the Western Hockey League, but you know, we had about five lines, so a lot of guys were hungry to get in the lineup, so there was a lot of competition. But we had a lot of players who had aspirations to go and play pro after.
Yeah.
You know, some of the players, like eventually, you know, not during my time, but like Derek Ryan played for the Golden Bears, and you know, obviously he's moved on to the NHL, and we also, many of us, had that same aspirations, and it didn't work out. A lot of guys did go and play some pro and a lot of into the American Hockey League, but no NHL games. But, you know, we were still pushing. There was a lot of pride, and it was a wonderful organization.
Yeah. A wonderful organization, and that's only the peak of the iceberg, because there's so much respect in there. And you also verbally mentioned it. You're a great coach, tremendous respect. Made you laugh too when they talked about you bringing the guys in and working them hard. But granted the fact that there's still so many years left of you having a great coaching career, it's also probably the part of your career where one can start talking about legacy. And literally every clip that I found of Chris Knobloch talking about you, it's the respect component, what he learned from you, that he admires you as a coach. What does it mean to you knowing that you've had a hand in influencing the next great generation of coaches?
It means a lot. It means a lot to me. When I see clips like that, it touches my heart, and I get emotional when I hear those things, because it's when people feel that way about you, it means a lot. It means a lot more than wins or losses. It's how you affect people that is the ultimate compliment. And, you know, it's very flattering, very, very flattering and very heartwarming and touching.
Let me be one of the probably many people telling you that this is more than deserved. And with the appointment of Chris Knobloch as the Edmonton Oilers head coach, a lot of media people started digging deeper. And especially when they went on the playoff run last year and the Stanley Cup final run, you were contacted by a lot of media outlets and talked or gave me interviews about Knobloch. And in one of the articles, I found a nice quote from you where you said, a lot of times coaches get maybe too much credit and too much blame when things go good or bad. But I think in this situation, because of the circumstances when Chris took the team over, it's hard to ignore the impact he's had on this team. And I think this is a nice anchor point, especially when we think about coaching and what coaches can do. We've been there. We've seen it. If things go well, it's the best coach in the world. Yeah. If things go south, you've been there too. How true do these words still ring, or do they ring truer in 2025 than ever before?
In what respect, Martin?
In terms of the media and how much they interpret into a team doing well not doing well.
Yeah, I think it's the same. I think that too often the coaches get... when things are well, everything's positive and great. And when things go poorly, the first person that pays the price for that is the coach. It's never shared. It's almost always the coach. And then they might look a little bit deeper than that when they see the real reason, if they want. But that's maybe too much work for people. So the coach is the person that takes the blame when things go poorly far more than he probably should, because that's just the nature of the business. And similarly, when things are going well, then everything's fine. And no, I don't think that changes. I think it's still very much the same. I want to share a story with you about Louis DeBrusque.
Go ahead.
We used to run a professional camp. Louis mentioned about his skating with us at the U of A. And we used to run a professional camp with all the Oiler players that would come in before training camp. We would have them at the university 2 weeks prior to them going to their NHL camp. And my whenever I would start a practice, I would do one quick drill, and then I'd bring the guys in, and I'd go through four or five different shooting drills all at the same time. And I did that the first time we did it, and all the players dispersed, went to the spots they were supposed to go to, and Louis looked at me, and he says,
"Head spinning.
That's too many drills," he says. "We'll never get this." And I said, "Louis, you'll be fine." So it was kind of funny. Louis's a great guy. He spent almost a month with us the 1 year because he was a contract holdout.
Okay.
And they were great to have around because it kept everybody motivated. Chris alluded to it in that clip. We had a lot of really good players, and they were at the university, but they were hockey players first, and they were students second. And you always
normally should be the other way around.
Well,
but yeah.
It should be the other way around, and that was one of the reasons the program was so successful, because the guys still had dreams and aspirations about being hockey players. We led the country in academic All Canadians, so they were students, but their number one priority was hockey.
Also shows good character if they do fulfill their academic duties.
And so we had quality people all the time and good players, and we had a culture that was, when I first went in, the team had missed the playoffs for a couple of years, which is totally unheard of at the University of Alberta. That never happened. So it took a little bit. My first year, we made the playoffs, but we didn't win in the playoffs. My next 9 years after that, we went to the national championship. And as the time progressed, I became less and less important, because the leadership and on the team and the culture that had been developed just maintained itself and carried on from team to team, and players changed, but the culture stayed the same, which was a real tribute to the players. I just had to make sure I didn't get in the way and let them do the things that they wanted to do. And it was an incredible experience, an incredible environment.
Just listening to this and listening to Chris Knobloch, I think we have to do a special episode on the University of Alberta Golden Bears at some point in time. But what we're here for is we're approaching the home stretch of the regular season. The contenders and the pretenders, as I'd like to call them, they've started to separate a little bit. And then again, we've had last place Bolzano a couple of years ago. go all the way to the championship on a magic carpet ride we've hardly ever seen before. When we talk about contenders, and we're going to do that in this episode and about some of the bottom seven teams in the next episode, I'm always wondering at what point when you're doing well in the standings and it's December and it's January and it's starting to get intense in terms of the games, you get almost always three games a week now as it's going to be in the playoffs. At what point do you start the process to be able to shift gears? And I have to back this up a little more, because every time round one of the playoffs rolls around, you, as a broadcaster, you go like, where was this brand of hockey the previous 48 games? And this can't happen overnight. So when you start sharpening the knives, when you start upping the ante and trying to bring up the intensity to be ready for that first game of the playoffs and a long playoff run?
It begins the first day of training camp. You put things into place. And the key, you put things into place, and then you work through the entire season to be playing your best hockey at the end of the year. And the best way to do that is to, you always want to win, but there's going to be a period during the season when things aren't going as well as you might want them to. And the key thing is not to panic during that time and ride it out, knowing that it's going to help you long term, because at some point you're going to have a downtime. And if you have that downtime and you panic and you push, then you force yourself out of it instead of letting yourself get out of it, which then if you let yourself get out, then you have the attention of the team and they realize that now we have to do this to be successful. And you put that in place at the beginning of the year. You've got everything and you work on it throughout the course of the year, but just don't panic when things aren't going as well as you might like.
Easier said than done.
Easier said than done. Be patient. And during that time, you do things to make sure it doesn't last forever, but you don't jump off the bridge every time something goes wrong. You just stay patient. You stay the course. And then by doing that, when you get to the international break, then you have your 10 days off or whatever it is. You take 4 or 5 days off, refresh, and then you come back. And my philosophy always was, as soon as that break was over, bang, you spend the six or seven days of practice heading into the remaining games, full throttle, working on conditioning, fine-tuning every parts of your game, and then using that as a springboard for being at the right place at the right time in the playoffs. But if you don't do the work throughout the course of the entire season, then you don't have anything to build on. And you use that time to put your game really into place.
So is there a point of no return when it's indeed too late to flip the switch or change things in the many, many processes?
Well, I don't think you flip the switch. I think the switch is always on. It's just how much pedal or how much gas do you have? How much you're pushing the gas, how much you're pushing the gas, how much you're letting things flow, and how much, when do you put the metal down? When the season ends, the players know it's a new start. So I don't think it's too late if you've got the foundation that you've built through the course of the year. Even if you have tough times going in, you don't want it. But when the playoffs start, it's a new season. And if you're healthy, then you have a chance to make some damage. And you hear it all the time. People say just get in, just get in, and then we'll go from there. And that's true, providing you've done the work to have a good enough team to succeed when you get in there and you're prepared to take those next steps.
Now you're known for your fond analysis and the ways of thinking the game, dissecting the game, and that's what we want to do here at Win Today Hockey O'Clock. And this is why you brought a couple of clips along. And what we're going to do is dedicate ourselves specifically to special teams in this episode and in the next episode. And what stands out for the bottom or for the top six teams is that they've almost exclusively got great special teams. In that regard, and I might answer that question myself, but to you and everything that you wanted to be able to do on the ice. How important were special teams in your success equation?
Well, special teams are really important. They're really important. They're just as important in the playoffs, but they're less prevalent. Because say what you want, there's fewer penalties in the playoffs than there is in the regular season. So if you're used to getting 5 power plays during the regular season, you're lucky to get 2 in the playoffs.
So you need to make them count even more.
You got to make them count even more, and so because they have a greater impact. So they're still as important. You just get fewer opportunities to take advantage if you have a good power play during the playoffs. So you better be able to produce offense 5-on-5, because if you're relying on your power play to produce offense for you to win games, you're probably not going to be able to do it in the playoffs because you get fewer opportunities than you would during the regular season. And you're playing the same team night after night.
Right.
So that complicates things as well. I mean, the league is very much schedule-driven. And by that I mean, if you look at some of the winning streaks that have started in the league, and this is no disrespect to any of the teams that I'm talking about here, but if you play 13, 12, 8, 9, and 7 in your first 5 games,
might be easier to go on a win streak.
It's easier to go on a win streak than if you're playing 1, 2, 3.
I mean, in that regard, and we've talked about this before we started the recording too, there appears to be several tiers in this year's championship. And I can really remember a championship where we had a clear-cut top 4, then some of the middle ground teams, and then some of the teams that want to get up, and some clear cut bottom dwellers. Has the league ever been this segregated, separated?
I think at one point it was, but not for a long time. This is the most difference I've seen between 13 and 1 that there's ever been, or 13 and 4. Or 12 and 13, or 11, 12, 13, and the top 4 teams. I think it's the greatest separation that I've seen in a number of years in the league. And similarly, even 10 to 11 is, I think there's a bigger separation than there has been in previous years.
Again, what we want to do here is talk about some of the teams. And gladly enough, we were able to poll some of the fans at the Hockey Forum because they're extremely knowledgeable. And what we want to try to do here is create knowledge and a deeper understanding of the game. And, of course, the 2 teams from the top 6 that were mentioned that people wanted us to talk about are your former team, the Steinbach Blackwings Linz, and obviously Klagenfurt is one of the most popular programs in the country. And we'll start with the Steinbach Blackwings Linz. They're now in the 3rd year under Phil Lucas. Mm-hmm. He's done a tremendous job of steadying the ship. We talked about things that and how things went south in the past in Linz, and how they had to rebuild and regroup and rebuild a fan base, basically. Mm-hmm. So they've really come a long way. From you watching now from the outside and not from a bench, what has happened in Linz? What goes through your head when you think about that?
Well, I think that with Linz, if you look at their team, their special teams are good. I think they're 4th in the power play and they're 2nd in the penalty kill. That's pretty good. Their defense is solid. They're the 5th best defensive team as we speak here for as far as goals against. Their offense is 7th, which is...
Yeah, they have good days and then they have not so good days.
So because they're
foul, would you call it streaky?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the beginning of the season, and they went 4 games, they scored 1 goal in the first 4 games that they played. They never scored a power play goal. Their power play was horrendous for the first month and a half, and now it's 4th in the league. And I it's too simple, but I think their team revolves around Brian Loebler. He's a leading scorer in the league right now. He's got 22 goals as we speak. And when he's going, he carries the offense. And when he carries the offense, the team, and not only 5-on-5, but also on the power play. And when he carries the offense, they have a much better chance to win. And they're 1-goal games with Linz. They're not going to score five or six goals a night. So every game is going to be a tight game. The thing with Linz is they play a very, what I would say is a stable game. They don't give up a lot of odd man rushes. You have to make things happen with Linz. They don't give you opportunities. So they play.
You have to put in the work.
Yeah. They don't give you anything.
Yeah.
And so they play a more conservative game as far as they're more letting the play come to them than they are forcing the play. So by that, they've usually got everybody back. They're in good defensive structure. They're in good spots. So you really have to work and press to get your opportunities and to score against them. And that gives them the opportunity to have enough offense to win the games. And if their power play is going, then they win the one-goal games a little bit easier than they do if they're not producing on the power play. Because every game they play in is a one-goal game, a tight game.
And there have been instances, even recent instances, where their power play really got going. There's a game that happened on January 10th where they indeed scored three goals with the man advantage. And that's the first clip that we want to look at. I'd propose we just look at the first clip. You're trying to point things out. And if you want to take another look at it, please just say so, because we can always cue it up once more. But before I get head over heels here right now by talking too much, let's just have a look at the first clip that you brought along. It's a power play goal from Graham Knott. What stands out here?
Okay, here are the things that I look for on a power play. There's I'm going to give you seven things here.
Seven.
But
you probably already shortened the list down seven, huh?
Yeah. But these are things that you're looking for, and if they just stop it, and we can go through it again, you can see these.
We'll definitely cue it up.
Yeah.
Right.
The first thing is you want to be able to threaten from the point, and that means your defensemen have to get inside the dots. So as soon as they get inside the dots, the defensive penalty killers have to adjust. If they're outside the dots, nobody cares, because that's where they want you to be. So get inside the dots. Okay? You need net presence. You need somebody in front of the net taking the play away from the goalie so he can't see. And that also ties up a defender usually, which opens some things up. You're looking for seam passes, because a seam pass makes the defense adjust. Goalie seer viewing, seam pass goes through. Room to make a play. Then you're looking to get pucks to the net. And the other things that are not in this clip, you have to think possession before position, which means if you're under pressure, you have to get the puck first and then worry about setting up your power play, because if you don't get the puck, you can't set up your power play. Score off the rush if you get the chance, and have different looks. Now, if you look at this clip.
Yeah, we'll cue it up once more, and you can say stop, and we'll stop it wherever you want it.
Actually, stop it right here, please. Okay. Lebler, front of the net presence. Is that Rowe? Doesn't matter who it is. He's inside the dots, so he's a threat. He's drawing the penalty killers out. Now you've got St. Amand and Canott on the other side. Now watch what happens. Let it roll, fellas.
Yeah, you're directing the directions.
Seam pass, traffic in front, room to take a shot, rebound, bang. Simple play.
Sometimes it is that simple.
It is that simple. If you move the puck quickly, and if you create those opportunities by when I'm talking to my penalty killers, the things that I tell them is don't allow point shots, take away seam passes, and win the battle, loose pucks, and clear the zone.
That was
simple
just,
stuff.
That was just the first goal in a three-goal effort by the special team. So I suggest we move on to the next one. And before we watch the next clip, it's a goal by, of course, Brian Lebler, the all-time leading goal scorer. You coached him as the all-time winningest head coach in the league. How amazing is it that he's still doing it I think at the tender age of 36 now?
It's incredible. I say it's incredible, but I'm not surprised, because nobody shoots the puck better than Brian. Nobody has a quicker release better than Brian, or quicker release than Brian. Nobody, he's in good shape. He's not the greatest skater in the world, so he hasn't lost a step, because he doesn't have one to lose.
Yeah.
But I mean, he always gets there, and he finds a way to get into open spots, And nobody shoots it. Nobody gets rid of it better than he has. Max Reverdink is another guy that shoots a little bit like Brian, not to the same level, but he has a quick release. And that's so I'm not surprised, but it is amazing that he's still keeping it going at the age that he is.
If there's the minuscule chance that Brian Lebler is watching this right now, sorry, Brian, no offense about the not losing a step, because he gets the job done, and that's what it's all about. And what I was always wondering, because there is some competition in terms of the best shooter in the league, and we've openly wondered about it on air the other day if Matt Fraser might give him a run for his money. No?
No.
It's Brian Lebler?
Brian Lebler... is, you say, I coached him in Linz for all those years. He's one of the top five guys I've ever met in the league, as a person. Not in the league, in my entire career of coaching.
Wow.
Over 40 years, he's in my top five. As far as the quality of individual he is, you compare that with, you combine that with his ability to play, his leadership, his attitude. He's in my top five. I'd give you my top five guys that are the worst I've ever been involved with in hockey, but I'll save that.
We'll save that for another day. Yeah. But it speaks volumes, because you've coached hundreds of players. Yeah. And if he does make your all-time top five, holy moly, quite a testament. Well done, Brian Lebler. But we're here to talk and dissect clips. This is a goal from Brian Lebler. We'll let it roll and then cue it up once more. What happens right here? Best shot in the league.
Five hole. I believe it went five hole on JP, but he was thinking he had traffic in front. Here, can you take it back to the beginning, fellas? And again, you got to block shots if you're penalty killing. You
right. can't now, let we'll Brian just let Lebler. It roll and then yeah, back okay. it up to the very beginning.
Yeah, five hole. You can't let Brian Lebler shoot. I mean, come on. He's the best goal scorer in the league. Okay, first of all, you've got your inside the dots presence. Pass here. Now, the other thing here that's different from the last Linz power play is versatility on the power play. Lebler was in front on the last power play.
Right.
This power play, he slipped out, and now he's the shooter, and we've got traffic in front. And Sinema's smart. He wants to get out of the way because Lebler shots hurts if he gets hit. Now, I mean, you can't let this man shoot if you're killing penalties. The same thing with Ovechkin. He's been playing for 20 years and he's still scoring from the same place. It's incredible. But you just, this is a, again, this is just a up top, seam pass, shot.
Because you're mentioning Sean Sinema wisely getting out of the way. If this doesn't work, how mad are you as a coach on the bench that he's not taking away the goalie's eyes anymore?
No, I'm not happy.
Okay.
I'm not happy, but I don't think he gets out of the way for, I'm not sure why he moves, but...
Well, Lebler's shot is one of the hardest.
You don't want to get hit.
I wouldn't blame him.
Some guys shoot hard and some guys are heavy, and you hear that term. And by heavy, I mean, it hurts when it hits you. I mean, some guys can really shoot it, but it doesn't have the same impact. When Brian shoots through a brick wall. He just has that, and he has a quick release. So I don't want to wax poetic about Brian too much longer, but he's a generational player for our league.
You don't become all-time leading goal scorer in this league by not doing the things the right way. One of the interesting players on the Steinbach Blackwings Linz past couple of years has been Sean Sinema. He'll take center stage in the next clip, the next goal that we are going to look at, because he scores the goal. What stands out during this play?
Okay, similar setup. Still getting to the middle.
And similar result.
Similar result. Not works it here. And the thing, we've got our traffic, but we talked about loose pucks. Getting to a loose puck, you have to be prepared and able to get to loose pucks. And this is what happens here. There's a loose puck. He gets to it. Not a seam pass here, but we've got the shooting. We got double screen in front. So it's tough for the goaltender. Pass to the outside. Sinema's an option in the middle. And again, he gets to the loose puck. A shot that the goalie can't catch. If the goalie catches that, it's over. So it's another thing that I try and emphasize with the people that I coach. Don't let the goalie catch the puck. If he catches it, the play's over. He doesn't catch it, and the rebound's there, and Sinema puts it in. That's Lebler shooting again, correct?
Which is why you make him aim for the pads or the blocker more often than not?
Anything that allows... Well, first of all...
Anything
but the glove. Anything that he can't smother. And it's always more difficult. You can see, I think JP's... Is it JP or is Mosier playing this game? I think it's JP. But anyway, he's trying to look around the traffic in front, and that makes it more difficult for him to track the play. And then...
And, of course, he's already out of position.
Yeah, he's bobbing and weaving to try and see the play, and then makes it more difficult to respond to the shot. And make when you have trouble responding to the shots, harder to contain a rebound or catch it.
Love when you start dissecting the plays. We've brought along one other clip for the Black Wings, and that takes us back to a November 15th game. I think it was in Klagenfurt against the KC. And it's a goal by Andreas Klister. Before we look at the goal, how about that bounce back year of Andreas Klister? He's been around for a long time. He's had so much success, and the last couple of years were very difficult. How nice is it to see that he's gotten back on track?
No, it's great. It's great when players have the ability to get their game back. And he's always been a dangerous player, in my opinion. He always competes at high level, and sometimes it doesn't work. It's frustrating, but he's stuck with it. Now he's having some success again, which is always a good thing.
One of the true good guys in this league, and he's the goal scorer in this clip. But what do we have to watch out here for?
Okay. Okay. Key things to watch for here is getting to the loose puck. And anytime there's a loose puck, the defenders have to adjust, and they're trying to get to the puck. And you can watch Klagenfurt's defenders here. They really have to move when they overplay, and it opens up the backdoor pass to Chrysler. First of all, Lintz gets to the puck, draws two players, in the middle again inside the dots, one-time shot, which is always difficult, loose puck retrieval right here, gets to it, moves it right away, inside, always want to move the puck inside if you can. Now he's got great offensive position, and you can see that everybody's looking.
Go down to the goal line?
He can, exactly.
Try to not risk that pass.
Well, the D-man in front is frozen because of the guy that's low, and he just slides, and it's a one-timer. If he cradles this, the odds of it going in are limited because the goalie has a chance to get over, but he lets it go right away. One-time shooting is always important on a power play.
As Alexander Ovechkin in the National Hockey League has shown us time and time again, Peter Schneider probably the most dangerous one-timer the Winterthur Ice Hockey League has. You haven't talked about him, but we need to talk, I think, about Logan Rowe, because he's the man who made almost all the plays go in. And you love to have a puck move in, power play, just a creator on the point. How close does he come to being one of the best at that position in this league?
Well, I think this season he's definitely a top performer. I like Murray and Salzburg. I think he's really good.
Holy F, his skating.
Yeah, he's really good. I'm just trying to think. I don't think there's as prominent an offensive power play defenseman in the league this year as there has been in previous. I look at Hungary, and Tim Campbell is there, but I'm not sure that he's upper echelon when it comes to that. No disrespect. Bolzano really doesn't have anybody that does that job. Klagenfurt, not really, unless they have Peterson on the back end, and he's orchestrating things from there, which they'll do on occasion. And they have capable people, but not a real quarterback. Gratz, the player that they've just recently hired, might fill that role. He's got offensive instincts. And you go down the list, Rowe might be, he's definitely on that list for sure, because I'm not certain there's as much competition as there has been in other years. You look at Heinrich in Vienna when he's healthy, he's really good at doing that. But I don't think there's as many as there have been in previous years.
And of course, makes it more dangerous if he, for whatever reason, catches the injury bug. It not only hurts your defense tremendously, but his special teams. And we've seen late injuries or late in the season injuries. So wishing all the top defenders and all the players in the league well, but injuries are bound to happen. And Linz is a team that, opposed to Salzburg, probably can't reload at the same monetary level as they could. So, yeah.
That's one of the other things going into the playoffs. You have to be healthy. And the health of your team through the playoffs is really important. A couple of years ago when I was in Phylac, may have been three years ago, the year we finished in second place. I can't remember which year it was. I get all my years confused, but I think it was 3 years ago. We lost Chris Collins in against Ljubljana.
Yeah, second game of the series.
Second game of the series. Well, for a team like Phylac at the time, you can't lose that quality of player and not expect to have difficulty moving forward against Hungary. We battled and we took it to six games. We had a chance to do more. But when you take that person out, it has a huge impact on your team, and it's very, very difficult to overcome that. You have to stay healthy, and you can always say next man up. And if you've got a next man up that has that ability, then you're fine. But usually, it's not quite that simple.
And don't forget, Linz has already been dealt a tough blow at the start of training camp when one of the difference makers in Emilio Romi got hurt. Yeah. And I mean, we're still hoping to see him play again, but who knows if he's going to be ready for the postseason. Just shows how difficult it is to win in the postseason and how much goes into winning. I mean, you're a witness to that. You've seen it many, many, many times. And that brings us to, and you've already had almost the perfect segue, because the other power play we're going to dissect is one from Klagenfurt. Let's have a look. This is one of the clips that you brought along, dating back to the same game that we just watched, where Klagenfurt scored twice on the power play, albeit in a losing effort. This is the goal that made it 2-4. By Nick Peterson. And he's another one. Mm-hmm. He's been around for so long. He's been excellent most of the times. He's one of the still premier scorers, also in his late 30s. Still so much that he brings to the table. When we look at this goal and the role that Nick Peterson has, what do we have to look out for?
Well, I think in this goal, again, we get the pucks up top and we get guys moving to the middle. Okay, down to the side, and he threatens traffic in front, and we get to a loose puck, and here's the play right here. Moves the puck inside. Most people would try and move that puck down to the wall. Game over. He moves it inside. Anytime you move pucks inside on the power play, you're going to get opportunities. Now it's a 3-on-1 in front of the net. Outside play, rebound coming up here, and Peterson fights for it, scramble, puts it in. But again, same principles, but the key, they move the puck quickly. They got to a loose puck quickly. They moved it right away. They moved the puck inside, which is a high skill play.
And who made the play? Thomas Wunderpfund, one of the smartest players in the league.
And then it results in the goal. And I mean, and that's the thing. You have a basic structure, and here's where the coaching player dichotomy comes in. You coach a basic structure. But you buy and recruit your power play. You get the best players you can, the most highly skilled players you can. The coach gives them the structure first of all, the coach gets you into the zone. So you scout the opposition, you give them the breakouts to get in. And then once you get in the zone, you have a basic structure, but the players have to make plays like this for your power play to be successful. And this is what separates the power play. If you look at the power plays that are in the top five, or between five and the same structure, for the most part. Almost everybody plays the same structure, which I don't agree with, but that's fine. Most people do, but it's the execution within that structure. So the coaches have done the same things, I would think, for the most part. So they've got the same structure, same design, but why is one power play at 10% and the other one at 25% using the same structure? The players.
But you mentioned a key point, and most of the clips that we're taking a look at, they don't have the breakout passes or the setup or just the instance where they move into the offensive zone. You were and are famous for just the number of aces that you had up your sleeve, also in terms of breakouts. Let's just assume your power play is backed up. You have your number one power play unit on the ice. How many different breakout versions do they have at their disposal?
Well, in the current game we're playing, they would have one or two at the most, because you would have pre-scouted the opponent and you would know which one or two breakouts are going to work.
Okay.
Okay. If I would say we would have eight breakouts, mm-hmm. and we would practice the eight breakouts all the time. This is just me. I know other teams don't do mm-hmm. it this way. We would have eight breakouts. We'd practice them. We'd practice the routes with no resistance. And everybody would do it, not just the power play people. We'd practice it with no resistance. We'd practice it with one forechecker. We'd practice it with two. And then we would have these things in place. So when we played Bolzano, who does a right side push, I'm starting sounding like an NFL
Go
coach
ahead.
Now, does a right side push, we'd have a breakout for that. If they retreated, then we'd have a breakout to drop the puck back to speed. If they boxed up and just had a 2-2 kind of, didn't put any pressure on, we'd have a breakout for that. If they put pressure on us, we'd have a breakout to beat that. My philosophy on the power play breakout is that your first pass has to beat the first forechecker. The first pass has to beat the first forechecker.
And you wouldn't believe how often you see instances where that's not the case.
If they're backing off, then the first pass is the drop pass to get the speed to come out. If they've got a guy deep, you bring guys back, first pass beats that guy, now you're coming up with speed, you've lost the first guy, now they're back on their heels, and you adjust your break-ins from there. And my philosophy is that you start this in training camp, and then when you play, you've got all of these things in place, and when you play a particular team, you just bring the one out that's most effective against that penalty kill. Again, my philosophy on that is I don't have two units and one unit has one breakout and the other unit has another breakout. Okay, because if I'm coaching against that, I get my penalty killers to take away the number one power play unit's breakout. And I'll let the second power play unit do what they can. So I want to take away the strength of the opponent by taking away their breakout. So now from a power play perspective, however they're killing, then that power play, or I'll have the power play breakout that beats that forecheck with both my units. Mm-hmm. Because from my perspective, why would you, if you can beat it with one breakout, why would you have a different one? You don't disturb the penalty kill.
But let me just intersect you, because there are coaches and coaching staffs in the league and have been in the past who never seem to have a plan B. If plan A goes awry, there was no plan B. Mm-hmm. Now you have eight different breakout versions in your toolbox, mm-hmm. as I'd label it, and you're mostly using two. But over the course of the series and a tight playoff series that maybe goes seven, teams adjust and readjust. Mm-hmm. How often have you had to use everything that you had in your toolbox in a series or in a season?
In a season, always.
Okay.
Otherwise, it wouldn't be there. There'd be no point in having it.
It's plain and simple.
Yeah.
You know what? Let's take another look at another clip that you requested. It's a goal in the same game from November 15th. Nick Peterson just made it 2-4. Matthias Vom, 3-4. What's in there?
Okay, puck possession. Possession before position, get the puck out high. Well, that's just a good play, you beat a guy one-on-one and you get the puck to the net. All these players are just getting pucks to the net with traffic and somebody there to bat it in. I'm not sure what Lintz is doing on the penalty kill. They got lost here a little bit. And when you beat a guy, so you can see them here, there's two guys on the puck down low. They move it here, then they bring it over to, is it Fromm? Yeah. And now he just gets it passed here to the net with traffic in front, and that guy's all alone, makes a good play to go around. And then, again, the guy's all alone to get the rebound and put it in. A shot the goalie couldn't handle, rebounds in.
And when we look at the way he stick handles, the way he makes the play, skill players that make a power play go in Klagenfurt offensively, has a lot of them. But what's been impressive over the past couple of weeks on the back end, they played with Austrians only. And with Jesper Jensen-Abo out, with Stephen Strong out for longer instances, they didn't have a quote-unquote import defenseman. How would you assess the quality of play that Klagenfurt's defense gave him without those two players?
Oh, it's been really impressive. I mean, that's one of the things that that Klagenfurt, that's one of the reasons they're in the position that they're in, is that they've had other people step up. They've got good players. That's the first thing, is and they've got good players, and I always don't take this personally. I always take I take offense to when people say Austrian versus import. To me, they're all hockey players. They've got good hockey players, and some of them just happen to be Austrian, and some of them happen to be North Americans. And I don't divide, personally, I don't divide players by nationality. I divide them by ability. And they've but the common thread is that and it's true, there's far more players there to choose from when it comes to international players and import players. So you have a greater opportunity, if you want to do so, to have better players in that area because there's just more of them. But they've done a really good job cultivating local players and bringing top Austrian players into their lineup. And you cannot succeed in the league without that. And that's what makes it difficult, because if you look around the league, you look at Bolzano, not quite the same kettle of fish there. You look at Hungary, not the same there. You look at all the international teams, they're not playing by the same rules. First of all, Hungary is the only team in Hungary, so they draw the top players. So it's a little bit different.
Yeah, but we might get to the level playing fields or how tilted they are maybe a little later in this conversation or maybe next week. But it's no coincidence that we'll look at two defensemen goals on the power play from Klagenfurt in a bit. Just because I've been wondering that myself, if there is indeed a correlation. And granted, Kirk Fury has coached many of the guys he now pulled up, brought up into the A team in the Alps Hockey League. He's known them for many, many years. But does it help that a former defenseman like Kirk Fury, with an assistant coach who was a former premier defenseman in Dave Fisher as well, does it help to have a defensive background to help coach defensive talent?
I don't think so. I don't think it's prerequisite. The only thing that might help is the players might hear the message a little bit clearer because they know that this person has gone through that. But as far as the knowledge base and those things, I don't think it's necessary. But the respect, no matter how you get it, is the important thing. And obviously both of those players or people have respect because of what they're doing. I'll tell you what, if they're having respect because of the coaches and people they are, not because they played, because if they weren't being able to, if they didn't have the message and weren't being able to sell it, it wouldn't matter if you were the best player in the world.
Sometimes it's that simple. A goal that we want to take a look at comes from a beatdown, a January 8th beatdown, an 8-0 affair. The goal that made it 3-0 at the hands of Timo Nikolic. Very first as a Klagenfurt player. What happens here?
Well, we talk about, one of the things I mentioned is scoring off the rush, and this is a prime example of that. They gain the zone easily. They draw everything down to them, and they find the late guy coming into the play who's all alone. I mean, Filak gets in a position where they're really looking down. And
what went wrong for the penalty kill here?
Well, the first pass beats the first forechecker, and now you've got speed coming up. Okay, is that the first pass right here? Beats the first guy. Now we've got speed coming up inside the dots, which on the breakout I think is very important until you get to the blue line, gives you more options. That's what we've got here coming up. We're coming up with speed. 1, 2, 3, 4 guys with speed. And the speed takes the puck deep, and now you can see it opens up the passing lane. Is that Maxa? Doesn't come back to the house. He comes back to the outside, and this guy's left all alone and makes the play. If you can score off, that's one of the things I always tell the guys, if you can score off the rush, go ahead. We don't have to set it up to score on the power play, and that's a prime example of guys scoring off the rush.
That was a goal that made it 3-0, and Klagenfurt proceeded to hammer Villach. Again, 8-0 affair. Curious to find out how the next derby will go. But it came even worse. On the way to the 8-0, Villach had to concede another power play goal. the goal that made it 6-0 at the hand of another defenseman, Clemens Unterweger, 92.
Kind of a scene past Mrsak. Traffic in front, shot from the point, puck goes in. But Klagenfurt does a good job of reading the pressure. Here you can see, initially there was a slight push down and they went up top, and then they were able to get the shot with traffic in front.
Now, before we take a look at the
There's the traffic, you can see it here.
If we take a look at the very last clip that... before we take a look at the very last clip that you brought with you, the net front presence and the players who usually or more often than not take the goalie's eyes away. Mm-hmm. Is it the Ruffles? Is it the Frazers? Like, your number one overall pick for that role in the league right now?
Oh, that's easy. Thomas Raffle. You can't... I mean, he's a house. There's no... When I was coaching, we were playing at Salisbury, I said, don't even bother touching Raffle. Leave him alone. Because you've got no chance to do anything with him. So what we have to try and do is front pucks so they don't get to the spot where he's causing problems in front. He's just a mountain. And like I said, you can't move him. There's nobody that can move him. The closest thing, the time that I've been in the league of anybody, Simon Dupree, when, you know, he was a big guy who could have a chance to move Thomas. But other than that, you're not going to move Thomas Raffle. I'm sorry. I mean, Frazier is very capable there, but there's nobody better than Thomas in being in that spot. Vanek was in the NHL was very good being there because he could tip pucks and whatever else. But if you're thinking of moving Thomas Vanek, give Allied Van Lines a call because nobody else is going to move him.
The immovable object. One more clip happened fairly recently on January 15th. Another, beatdown, 6-1, if I remember correctly, and Nick Peterson opened the scoring to make it 1-0 on a power play.
Yeah, well, there's a couple of things there. They drive it to the middle, one seam pass, and then Peterson slips off, and there's another tap-in goal in front. That's just a high-skill play from
skilled players.
Yeah. Again, some skilled guys. Mrsak's a very good power player as well, but there's the drive to the middle, which causes problems. There's an exchange, but that opens up the seam pass right here. Now there's nobody in front. Good. This is a great pass. That's just an incredible pass. Most guys are just going to shoot that puck, but that's a great pass.
I know it's a team effort, and I know it's 25 individuals that have to make this go, but if you have to sing out one player, and I know, like, that's the great thing that you're not an active coach right now, because you do have the opportunity to single players out about their excellence or not. Who makes this power play in Klagenfurt go more often than not? Who should they be afraid of losing? Like, if Linz loses Logan Rowe, as we talked about, their power play would suffer tremendously. And obviously, they're 5-on-5, too. But who's the guy Klagenfurt can afford to lose?
For me, it's Peterson.
Is it indeed?
Yeah. He's the guy that they can't afford to lose on the power play.
Why not Mrsak?
Well, now that's a fair comment. And I was thinking of him also, because if you look at the beginning of the year when he was out, their power play wasn't as effective, so he's right there. But if I'm coaching against Klagenfurt and I look at their lineup, and if Peterson is out of it, out of their lineup, and maybe it's because whenever in the derbies he was always so effective and so motivated. You know, it's funny because when I was in Villach, I would watch Klagenfurt play a lot in my pre-scouts, and we saw a different team in the derby than was there for most of their other games. So, and Peterson was always a big part of that. He was for me. He's as skilled a player that is. I'm not going to say he's the most skilled, but he's as skilled as anybody that's ever played in this league.
Getting to the derbies, and you've seen a lot of them firsthand, and for whatever reason, and you can correct me if that assessment feels wrong, but for whatever reason, Klagenfurt seems to get up for derbies more often than not, whereas Filler has got problems or had problems in recent years to make derbies a competitive affair as far as wins and losses go. Why is that? Or how is there a discrepancy? And if so, why?
Well, the records would suggest so, but I don't think there's any one particular reason.
Okay.
You can the one thing that Klagenfurt does a very good job of, and it's one of the things that I think is key for their team, is the pace of their game.
Mm-hmm.
I think of all the teams in the league, they play at the highest pace. And I mean, if you look at, you compare them to a team like Hungary, I mean, Hungary doesn't play at a high pace. They're smart players and they're a good team, but their pace is not at a high level. And Klagenfurt's pace is at a high level. I think it's the highest in the league. And it's sometimes when they're on top of their game, it's tough to control that pace. You really have to be on top of your game to do that. And the majority of the derbies were close games, and they just always found a way to for the most part, something would happen, they would end up finding a way to win in the end. You got to give them credit for that. But I know there were games that I felt we should have won when I was coaching there based on the game, but ended up not doing it. And there were other ones where that wasn't the case. Only one in particular, but...
Now, the two teams that we talked about, they're coming from a top six pool as it stands right now. The top six might change over the course of the next couple of weeks. It's basically seven teams vying for these top six spots. The team currently on the outside looking in is Villach, which we'll talk about next week on Win Today Hockey O'Clock. But just looking at those top six and which teams or team are, as it stands right now, and a lot can change on the personal side, injuries, whatnot, but which teams are set up best right now for a long postseason run? Is Salzburg still the team to beat, or do they have not more serious contenders than last year because Klagenfurt took him to a game seven, Bolzano took him to a game seven, but from what you see right now, give me one team.
One team? I'll give you, I'll handicap it a little bit. I think Hungary lost in the first round of the playoffs last year after a really good season, so that has to be a question mark. Salzburg has won three championships in a row. It's hard to win.
Two game sevens in a row.
Yeah, and so that's, you have to wonder that's at some point that worm has got to turn. Klagenfurt went to game seven last year and are having another really good season, so you have to think they're going to be in the mix. Bolzano is another team that's been really close the last couple of years but hasn't been able to get past Salzburg in really tight series, so you have to think they're in a spot where they might have a real good chance of winning this year, so that's two. And then I think it's tougher for Graz and Linz because of Graz is I mean, they're a very good team, but they haven't, I think they're not playing at the level they need to play at in order to be the team.
They just started coming up with a core, so maybe
it's exactly that
year or two that they're away.
You don't buy championships. We talked about it. I mentioned to you before we went on the air. You buy players, you build teams. And it takes time to build a team. You can do it in a season, but it takes time. And I think that's the spot they're in it. And, you know, Linz is...
I'll phrase the question differently, and I'll reference it to, or back reference it to the National Hockey League. We've seen that over the hump team now a couple of times. Florida lost against the Golden Knights, eventually got over the hump. The Avalanche had to stomach a couple gut punches in the playoffs and then eventually got over the hump. And let's not even start talking about Tampa Bay and the many, many playoff oustings and then finally winning the cup. Will we see an over-the-hump team this year?
Well, I think if that's the team, I think it's Bolzano. For me, I think it's Bolzano if there's an over-the-hump team. Chris Knobloch had a great quote heading into the NHL finals last year, the guy asked him, do you think it's an advantage for Florida to have been in the Stanley Cup final the previous year? And Chris's comeback was, well, have you heard of the Buffalo Bills, who lost 4 Super Bowls? That was his comeback. Yeah. But in a row. I found it humorous, but I don't think you can underestimate the importance of having that experience. You know, it was tongue in cheek when he said it, but that makes a difference when you've been able to experience that. And I think Bolzano's been knocking at the door for a couple of years. And if I was going to pick a team that building has come to, that would be the team I would pick. I'm not going to pick them to win the championship, but that's your, you know, that what you're talking about, that would be the team I would say it's on the, that have paid a price previously to maybe win this year.
We're about to find out. This episode comes out during the international break, so it's basically 3.5 more weeks until we get down to the nitty-gritty, the playoffs. This episode, we talked about the contenders. Next episode, I don't want to call them pretenders anymore. It's the bottom 7 teams and how they might round into shape and get back into business for the time being. Coach, it's always tremendous talking hockey with you. Glad I was able to pick your brain. Already looking forward to doing this next week. Thanks for talking hockey.
Well, my pleasure.
Win today, hockey. O'Clock.
Kurz durchatmen bei diesem Wahnsinn. Und das ging rasend schnell. Der Traum vom Finale ist erfüllt. Mit mittendrin statt nur dabei.
Die Fans stimmungsvoll und hoffnungsfroh.
Nice move. Another nice move. Oh!